Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. Your usual host, Cy, is vacationing in Hawaii. Our second hour today, we're honored to have as our guest, Mr. J.D. Flynn. J.D., you with us?
Hello, how are you?
There he is. J.D. Flynn is the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, a media apostolate of EWTN, covering the news of the world from the perspective of the Catholic faith. J.D. previously served as special assistant to Bishop James Conley, our dear friend, in the Diocese of Lincoln, and as chancellor of the Archdiocese of Denver. J.D. serves as canonical consultant to dioceses. What's the plural of diocese?
You know what? I get asked that question maybe more often than any other question.
All right. Well, we're gonna
give a different answer every time.
And religious communities, and as a consultant to the committees of the USCCB, his work has appeared in First Things, National Review, and the National Catholic Register, and in various canonical and Catholic publications. J.D. has a license in canon law, Juris Canonici. Canonici, did I say that right?
Nailed it.
Juris
Canonici.
From the Catholic University of America, and a master's degree in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville. J.D., my goodness. So we can talk about current events, we can talk about canon law, and we can talk about theology, right, with you. We get three in one. But we're going to try to keep it to the church in the news, right? J.D.?
Yeah, I'm moderately conversant in all of those things.
So well, that's all that it takes. J.D. and his wife, Kate, live in Lincoln, Nebraska, though you are going to be moving to Denver before too long, right?
That's right. So we've been in Lincoln for the last 5 years, and we've loved it. The Catholic News Agency is headquartered in Denver, and so when the school year ends, our family will be headed to Colorado, where we lived previously, where our family lives, and we're excited to be close to family and where God's led us.
Well, St. Christopher and Our Lady of the Way will be looking after the Flynn family as they make that move. Kate and J.D. have three beautiful children, Max, Pia, and the brand new Davy.
That's right. We do. Our son Davy is 7 months old. He's a great addition to the family. And I just got a text from my nephew and nieces in Colorado who are listening. So I say hello to Giovanni, Elin, and Vera as well.
Glory, glory. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH. Our topic today is the church in the news. So if you have a question about the church as it relates to current events, or perhaps a current event that you want to look at, that you want J.D. to discuss through the lens of the faith, then those are the kinds of questions we're talking about today, whether they be questions of domestic politics, perhaps even something in entertainment or in the culture, or international politics. All that is fair game today. The church, what the church is doing, how she is engaging the world, right? The call from the Second Vatican Council for the church to engage the world, and of course, certainly a call that we hear over and over from our Holy Father, Pope Francis, right, J.D.? He's exhorting Catholics to get out and engage the world.
That's right, to animate the temporal order with the Spirit of Christ. The Second Vatican Council says, and the Holy Father has been encouraging us to do that as well.
Right, and he, the Holy Father, of course, has the plane landed. I know he was on a plane earlier today. He is on his way to Chile and Peru.
That's right. The Pope did land in Santiago, Chile. He is going to be spending the next week, a little less than a week, in Chile and Peru for an apostolic visit. So he will
unpack that for our listeners. What's involved in an apostolic visit?
Sure. Yeah. So he's going to spend a couple of days in Chile, and he'll meet with civic leaders. He'll meet with the priests and bishops, religious men and women in the country, seminarians. He'll have a short meeting with just the bishops of the country, and he will celebrate Mass in Santiago, in O'Higgins Park, which is kind of the large park in Santiago, and they're expecting a pretty good crowd for that. So he'll have both private meetings with government officials, a meeting with the president of Chile, some church meetings with bishops and then priests and religious, and then he'll have this Mass for the Catholics of Chile.
This is probably not the appropriate word, because we don't really think of the work of the church in terms of secular politics. But does the Pope have, so forgive me, JD, but does the Pope have a particular agenda here? Is there something that he's hoping specifically to accomplish, or is this, you know, a run-of-the-mill apostolic visit and there's going to be six more this year and this is just one of them? What's his agenda?
Sure. Let's talk about Chile especially. You know, I think the Pope's agenda wherever he goes is to proclaim the gospel. And one thing that I left out that I think is very beautiful about his time in Chile is that tomorrow he'll also visit the largest women's prison in Chile and visit with prisoners there. So that's definitely a pastoral visit, a time in which he can connect with people who on the peripheries, as he so often encourages us to. But it's also a witness, and the Pope is aware of the PR implications of that, the sign value of the Vicar of Christ visiting with prisoners and speaking to the mission of the Church, you know, to the works of mercy especially. So it's a pastoral visit for him to visit with Catholics, to visit with his bishops, to visit with the government, but he's also aware of the sign value. And in Chile right now, the Church is in a difficult position and has been for a number of years.
Well, there's been some unrest, right, in the days preceding the Pope's arrival.
Yeah, so there are a few things going on that have all led to some protests from Chileans in anticipation of the Pope's visit. There was a priest in Chile, Father Fernando Cardima, a very prominent priest in Chile, who was discovered a few years ago to have committed acts of sexual abuse, and there's been a lot of criticism of the way that case has been handled. A lot of people have raised questions about what's happened with Cardima, and people have been protesting about that. There is some political difficulty right now, a number of issues, but some political difficulties about the economy in Chile, and then the treatment of indigenous people in Chile. And those things have been very political. And so these two things, kind of combining these political issues combined with these ecclesiastical issues, have led to a lot of protests in Chile. Churches have been vandalized. There were protesters who stormed the Apostolic Nunciature, the Vatican Embassy in Santiago last week. And Chile is a country with the lowest, if not the lowest, close to the lowest participation in the practice of the faith in the region. And so there are a lot of people who are critical of the church on the whole, and then people have been critical of Pope Francis in particular about some of these issues. And so that's led to a lot of protests. And so I think when the Pope does things like visit with prisoners in a public way, or when he celebrates Mass, I think one of the things that he's aware of is the importance of just bespeaking the centrality of the gospel itself, of Jesus Christ himself, in the mission and identity of the church, so that these things, which are so prominent in the press and in people's minds, I think the witness he wants to give is to the, give witness to the centrality of the works of mercy and the proclamation of the gospel in a very simple and human way.
That's really well said. So JD, but someone who lacked familiarity with the modern political history of Chile might find it puzzling that the Holy Father's visit would not, in fact, be welcome by the poor, by the indigenous, because justice for the poor, social justice, and the church's tradition thereof have been a centerpiece, if you will, of this papacy. So, you know, would it not make sense that the poor of Chile would be welcoming the Holy Father and his message of social justice?
Well, I think that's the case. And you mentioned the indigenous people, and the Pope has been very outspoken about the situation of indigenous people in Chile, which is part of the reason why other Chileans have raised some concern about his visit. The politics are very complicated, and they're complicated again by the fact that Chile, like much of South America, has a Catholic culture, but increasingly secular values and increasing number of people who don't practice the faith. And so, you know, I think the Pope wants to give a demonstration of that centrality of unity with the poor and our Lord's unity with the poor as a part of what he's doing there. But it is a very complicated thing, and a lot of it is exacerbated by the fact that fewer and fewer Chileans are practicing the faith, and so that impacts the way that they see these things. And I think a perspective sometimes that focuses on the political issues or these other issues, and that becomes then the kind of narrative. So I think one of the things the Pope wants to do is just bespeak a narrative of evangelization and witness.
888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Also streaming live on Facebook, Catholic Answers Facebook page, and the Catholic Answers YouTube page. J.D., we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, I want to ask you one more thing about the Holy Father's visit, and I'll just set you up here. This is not as if he were coming to the United States expecting, a level of security. There are potentially some difficulties with this trip, and maybe even, I don't mean to alarm our listeners, but potentially even some danger. So I'll put that question to you again when we come back after the break.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a very special offer for all of you interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, available for just $5 a copy. That's a savings of over 70%. I wrote this book specifically with you in mind to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue and give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, for just $5 a copy, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Whatever I have learned, writes Catholic Answers founder Carl Keating, I have learned from the masters of the craft. In his new book, Booked for Life, a bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist, Carl gives future generations a roadmap of what it takes and what it means to become a Catholic apologist. In the way only Carl can, he recounts numerous real-life situations he has encountered in his long career that illustrate the apologetic lessons he's learned. Then, drawing on a lifetime of experience, Carl reveals the books that helped him learn to defend the Catholic faith. Order your copy of Booked for Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. Christopher Check sitting in for the vacationing Cy Kellett, enjoying the beautiful sunshine in Hawaii. And I hope catching a wave. My guest this second hour is our dear friend J.D. Flynn, who is the editor of the Catholic News Agency. And our topic is the Church in the News. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH, also streaming live on Catholic Answers Facebook page and on YouTube. Any questions that you might have about what's going on in the church, in terms of the news, how is the church responding to things in the culture, to events in the culture, to events in domestic policy, to events in international policy? Those are all fair game for this exciting hour, and there's nobody better qualified to talk about them than our guest. J.D., before the break, I left you with a question. Because there has been some unrest preceding the Holy Father's visit to Chile, and not to alarm our listeners, that's not my purpose here, but is the Holy Father in some danger? Is there a security risk associated with this visit in a way that one we might not expect with, for example, a trip to the United States?
Well, I guess I preface my remarks by saying we were talking about protests in Chile, a couple of different groups that have been protesting in very serious ways the Holy Father's visit to the country. The Archdiocese of Santiago has said repeatedly that they don't believe that those attacks represent the feeling of the vast majority of Chileans. They say that Chileans are largely excited for the Holy Father to come to their country. They recognize the significance of it. Even those Chileans who don't practice the faith recognize the moral leadership of the Holy Father on so many issues and recognize his importance, and they're excited for this visit. So I don't think it's as if the Holy Father is sort of helicoptering into a hot zone or something like that. But
into an LZ.
right, exactly. But there have been, yes, I mean, there have been, I think that the number is six churches now that have been attacked in protest of the Pope's visit, and protesters who stormed, really, the Apostolic Nunciature, the Embassy of the Vatican in Santiago. And so there has been real unrest that has gone along with the Holy Father's visit and the security situation. I mean, I think, you know, the security situation is something that the Chilean government has to be aware of, that, you know, typically it's the government of the place where the Pope is visiting that provide him security. And so if, when he comes to the United States, the Secret Service provides him security. And I would say, as a proud American, I don't think there's probably a security service in the world that rivals the Secret Service for its ability to provide security. So the Pope is in, you know, a zone where there have been protests. Some of those protests, a small number of those protests, have turned to real violence. And the Chilean authorities who will be charged with protecting him will take that seriously. But, yeah, I mean, I think that it's not as if, you know, everywhere the Pope goes, he's in some danger. And I think that there are reasons to think that's heightened here. Again, not to be alarmist, but there are certainly reasons to think that's heightened here. To my mind, that's kind of, you know, the Pope's trips this year to Myanmar, to Bangladesh, this trip to parts of South America where there have been protests in opposition to his coming, that's a sign of his courage, his eagerness to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth, to be a witness to the church and her mission, even in places of difficulty. So, yeah, I don't think it's without risk, and I think there's something that we as Catholics can really admire about that.
And of course, all of us should be praying for him, for his
right.
So that there'll be apostolic fruit that's born from this trip, and then a safe return to the Vatican. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Let's go to Adam in Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Adam, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
No, thank you. Yes, so my question is in regards to, like, the Catholic teaching on just war. I'm just curious how that matches up with our current situation, the protracted wars, reports of civilian casualties, the staggering costs involved, and just the kind of the shadiness of the whole war on terror.
Great question, yeah, Adam. JD, so our American foreign policy in the Middle East now, a lot of Americans are perhaps we've sort of grown numb, if you will, to the fact that we're in the longest war in the history of our country. Someone can call and correct me if I'm wrong there. And perhaps not even altogether aware of the sense that we are at war. Are these things in accord with Catholic teaching? And recent popes have, I think, been, you know, fairly explicit on this question.
Yeah, it's a great question, and thanks for calling with it, Adam. You kind of put me in a hot seat, but I guess that's the nature of the show.
This is radio.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we have a story that'll publish on our at Catholic News Agency. Either it's up now or it will be up this evening. Yeah, it'll be up in just about an hour, actually. A story about the Maronite Archbishop of Damascus, Archbishop Samir Nasser, who lives in Damascus, and who recently shared that on the afternoon of January 8th, while he was taking a nap, he got up to go to the bathroom, and when he came back, a bomb had hit his room. His room had been hit with a bomb, and his life was spared only by a few extra seconds at the sink. The Syrian civil war, which has been going on, you know, since 2011, has killed more than 400,000 people, and millions of people have been either internally displaced. I mean, I think it's probably more than 12 million people who have either been internally displaced or become refugees. That's just in Syria. The same, you know, the situation is as grave in Iraq, and then of course in Afghanistan, where the long war began. The situation is very difficult, and especially difficult for Christians. It's a complicated thing to weigh the justice of our actions in the Middle East from the beginning of the United States talk about war in Iraq in 2003. Pope St. John Paul II opposed that, the invasion of Iraq, and we have seen that certainly the United States presence in the Middle East has not gone as people had expected. We didn't sort of go in and topple dictators instead of democracies and go home. We're learning that democracy building is an incredibly difficult proposition in the Middle East. And there are many people who are saying democracy just may well be incompatible with the culture and dynamics,
sure,
and religious practice of the Middle East. I think now for Christians, one of the most important questions is just about the implications of the various options that are available to the United States and other Western countries. A grave issue for us is the situation of Christians in the Middle East. Christian communities in Iraq were virtually wiped out by ISIS, and now are beginning to reclaim places that they had previously been decimated from. They're beginning to come back. Those who are refugees are internally displaced. They're beginning to rebuild. And the security that allows them to do that is in part security that's provided by the United States, or the training of the United States to the Iraqi military. In Syria, of course, we're concerned about the ongoing plight of Christians. In Palestine, we're concerned about the ongoing plight of Christians. And so it's not that we're just concerned about Christians, or even just concerned about other religious minorities, the Yazidi and others, but they're a sign of the great humanitarian crisis in the Middle East. And so you're right, there are lots of legitimate questions about American foreign policy in the Middle East, and especially the questions about should we have gone in the first place, or should we have gone in the first place in the way that we did.
So
now I think we have to ask difficult questions about what we should do in the current situation.
Oh, yeah, and incredibly thorny. So, Adam, how's that? Is that a good response?
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if there's a real true answer. I know it's a hard situation. And I guess just keep praying is what I'm going to do, and hopefully others as well. So,
yeah, I would say too, you know, in addition to continuing to pray, continue to support the Aid to the Church in Need and the Christian Ears Welfare Association, and other projects that support especially Christians in the Middle East.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I would encourage people. You mentioned Pope St. John Paul's objections to the American invasion, and Benedict XVI, who followed him, of course, had similar objections. And it's well worth the time that Catholics spend reading what the Holy Fathers had to say, and of course, Pope Francis, and then familiarize yourself, go to the Catechism with the Church's just war tradition. The Church begins, JD, correct me if I'm wrong, the Church begins with the presumption against war, because war is a bad idea, and a lot of damage, as you have cited, and death is going to be a consequence of it, direct and indirect. And so the Church presumes that going to war is a bad idea, and then the case has to be made in favor. Would that be a good shorthand for the church's attitude as it approaches these questions?
Yeah, and then the case to be made in favor is about necessity, the likelihood of a positive outcome, the ability to achieve a positive outcome with as much support for human dignity and avoiding civilian casualties as is possible. And a war guided by just war, the just war principles of the church certainly, certainly looks different from much of what we've seen in the Middle East, because we're trying to figure out, I think, how to fight justly forces that we've never, that are very different from anything we've encountered before.
Yeah.
And it's a tough thing to discern.
Yeah. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. The show is Catholic Answers Live. My guest is J.D. Flynn. The topic is the church in the news, and we will be right back after this break.
Catholic Answers Live.
It could be said that anti-Catholic notions of the church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows you how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never really seemed to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a very special offer for all of you interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5. That's a savings of over 70%. I made this DVD specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue and give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of my DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, Chris Check, Carlo Broussard. Our on-fire lineup of speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker for your event, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
Listening to your program has really touched my heart, and I just see such love and beauty, not only for Christ, but for people in general in the Catholic Church. And now I feel like I need more. I want to serve God more. I feel it so much that He's given me a gift to serve and to touch people, to love people. What would it take for me to maybe look into the priesthood?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Catholic Answers Live. My name is Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, sitting in for your favorite radio host, Cy Kellett, who is vacationing in beautiful Hawaii with his beautiful wife, Missy. My guest for the remaining 30 minutes of today is J.D. Flynn. J.D. is the editor of the Catholic News Agency. Our topic is the church in the news. So if you have questions about what's going on at the Holy See, what's going on at the USCCB, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Or if you would just like a Catholic perspective on current events, on the culture, on international affairs, call in with your question for J.D., 888-318-7884. J.D., the conversation that we were having there just before the break about the suffering, well, the question of the justice of American foreign policy, of course, But then one of the consequences of all this fighting, the suffering, particularly of Christians in the Middle East and places like Iraq and Syria, calls to my imagination a map that is up on the Catholic News Agency website. I encourage all of our listeners to take a look at this, the Catholic News, catholicnewsagency.com, catholicnewsagency.com. This map is staggering. The claim of this group, Open Doors, and with their 2018 World Watch List, I'd like you to speak to this if you can, claiming 215 million persecuted Christians worldwide. This map shows the top 50 worst countries for violence and persecution against Christians. And then these this Open Doors group makes the claim that something like 1 in 12 Christians lives with some form of religious persecution. Give us some analysis of this study and this map.
Right. Yeah. This was a study that's a study that's put out or updated annually by Open Doors USA, which kind of is a group that watches around the globe, reports from around the globe about religious persecution. And so their 2018 report talks about the danger that more than 215 million persecuted Christians face around the world, and in their ranking of what they say are the 50 worst countries for violence and persecution against Christians. And at the top of the list are countries like North Korea and Afghanistan, where conversion to Christianity can lead to arrest, or in the case of North Korea, being sent to a labor camp, to Orwellian re-education, and in some cases for Christians in North Korea today, to execution. They talk about Afghanistan, where Afghanis are banned from becoming Christians, and those who do convert to Christianity face persecution by their own tribes, their own families, their own villages, as being apostates from Islam, and again potentially facing death if not grave injustice. In Somalia and Egypt and India and Libya, Kazakhstan, Christians face increased persecution in some cases because of the official policy of the government, and in some cases because of the religious ideas of particular regions. And in India, there are regions where Christians face great persecution from their Hindu neighbors. In many countries, including Somalia, Islamic militancy is a great threat for Christians. We did Pakistan is another country where that's true as well. We did a story last week about a bishop in Nigeria who preached about the danger of what he called shrill Islamicization of the country, and he preached about this. And 2 weeks later, his own brother was kidnapped.
Oh my!
And spent 10 days in captivity before he was released. And the identity of the kidnappers has not been quite clarified, but Islamic extremist groups have kidnapped Christians, including six religious sisters who were kidnapped.
Recently released, right? Yeah,
recently released. That's right. They were kidnapped in November, and they were released last week. So there are places around the world where Christians are facing the possibility of martyrdom, of abduction, of violence, of displacement, even of rape or sexual abuse because they're perceived to be a lower class, or they're perceived to be an expendable, subhuman kind of person. There are two things I think we should take for that. One, we need to really work for religious freedom. Archbishop Laurie told me that recently, that when we work in the United States for religious freedom, we may think that the threats against us are not nearly as significant as they are in places like that. But when we work for our own religious freedom to protect it, we are a shining witness of hope for Christians around the world. And he said he's seen that. He's seen Christian activism for religious liberty start around the world because of what people have seen in this country. So we need to work for our own religious liberty. We need to support those organizations that support persecuted Christians around the world. I mentioned the Christian Near East Welfare Association, Aid to the Church in Need. And then we need to pray for our fellow Christians who are suffering persecution. And we need to remember what the Church has thought from the very beginning, which is that the persecution of Christians leads to the flowering of the faith, that there's grace in persecution, there's grace even in martyrdom, and that in places where Christians are persecuted, the gospel begins to take root, that as their blood is poured out, it's the blood of Christ that's poured into the soil itself, and the gospel begins to take root. So we need to have hope even amidst persecution, but we also need to pray and work for an end to it.
The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. There's, forgive me if I'm being a little provocative here, J.D., there's a common denominator here in most of these countries. North Korea is a piece apart. That's a tyrannical, atheistic, communist regime. But the majority, I would say the vast majority of the countries on this map are Muslim countries. Is that a fair analysis of the map?
It is a fair analysis of the map. There are places like Mexico and Colombia where drug cartels are persecutors of Christians, places like India where Hindu nationalists are persecutors of Christians, China, where Christians face threats from the communist government. But yeah, many parts of the persecuted Christians map are places in the Muslim world. And so understanding what that means, understanding the facets of Islam and how to relate to them is, I think, something that we're obviously still really working at. And I think Pope Francis himself is still really trying to figure out how we lead the church, one, in respect for our fellow sons of Abraham, but two, in an understanding of the threats that the church faces and how to respond to them.
Yeah, well said, well said. All right, I think we're going to take one more question here before we go to break. Walt, listening in Exton, Pennsylvania. Walt, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I was watching The World Over the other day, and Raymond Arroyo had on Father Gerald Murray, and they were talking about a priest who's on the Pontifical Council for Life, who was claiming that use of contraception by people who are in illicit, second marriages, in other words, not validly sacramental marriage, it's a positive good for them to use contraception. And he was citing Immortus Laetitiae for this. And I'm just wondering, has this guy been reprimanded publicly? Has he been discredited? I mean, this is like having Charles Curran on the Pontifical Council for Life. It's crazy.
Yeah, J.D., so you'll give us the details. I think he said his name is Chiodi, if I'm not mistaken, that he said it was there were occasions when it could be a moral obligation, right, for a couple to use contraception. And the talk he gave was back in December, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. It was back. It was, I think, December 14th. It's part of a series of lectures at the Gregorian University in Rome in anticipation of the upcoming the anniversary of Humanae Vitae, the upcoming synod on youth and young adults and vocations in Rome. What Father Chiodi said, I'll just give a little bit of a clarifier. What he said is that he wasn't talking about second marriages, but he was saying that there are situations where it could be recognized as an act of responsibility. I'm quoting from him here. It could be used as an act of responsibility that a couple would use artificial contraception. He says, not to radically reject the gift of a child, but because there are situations in which responsibility calls the couple and the family to other forms of welcome and hospitality. Well, Father Chiodi is wrong. I mean, that's not what the church teaches.
She teaches that contraception is an intrinsic evil.
Right, that the use of contraception in the conjugal act is intrinsically immoral. And so what Father Chiodi is saying is wrong. I don't know what the consequences of that will be for him. It's a fair question, I think. But certainly he's wrong. His point about Immortus Laetitiae, and it's something that I think Catholics would do well to watch, is this. One interpretation of the eighth chapter of Immortus Laetitiae, which is a difficult thing to, I think, interpret, to understand exactly what's being said there, but one prevailing interpretation is that marriage is an ideal, living in accord with the Church's teaching about marriage. The truth about marriage is an ideal that everyone should aspire to, but that some people are incapable of achieving that, and that the Church shouldn't hold them to standards that are impossible for them. Well, the difficulty with that view is that the Church says that holiness is possible for all of us. In fact, all of us are called to holiness, that becoming a saint should be the mission for each one of us. Curtis Martin said in a talk last week that every single one of us should believe that we're going to live a life of becoming a canonizable saint, that our holiness will be so evident that we might be canonized. And so if you believe that we're all called to holiness, it's hard to also believe that there are situations in which it would be morally impossible to live according to the truth, that God wouldn't give us the graces to live according to the truth, no matter how difficult it is. So this argument that is an interpretation of Amoris Laetitia is now, by Father Chiodi and perhaps others, being applied to contraception. And that's a very dangerous thing. If virtue isn't perceived to be possible, then more and more things will be perceived to be permissible. And we should be cautious about that. It means that we should be praying for the church, to be sure, praying for the courage of our bishops to teach the truth, and to teach it compellingly and winsomely and courageously. But it is a conversation that's happening right now among theologians in the church, and the answers are all there in Humana Vitae, and then in Evangelium Vitae, John Paul II's beautiful and insightful commentary on sexual morality and the teachings of Humana Vitae.
Walt, thank you very much for that call. JD, we're going to take another break here, but when we come back after the break, what I want to ask you is, what are the faithful supposed to make of a member of the Pontifical Council for Life lecturing at a papal university and speaking, as you say, incorrectly? So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with J.D.'s question right after this. J.D.'s answer.
Have a question? We've got answers.
Catholic Answers.
I love it.
Live.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or the DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking book by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can give to anyone as a starting point for helping them to find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Christopher Check sitting in for the vacationing Cy Kellett. My guest is the masterful J.D. Flynn. The topic is the church in the news. The phone number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. J.D., before the break, I left you with this question. So here's a man, a priest, lecturing at a papal university, a member of the Pontifical Council for Life, speaking something contrary to church teaching. I'm just an ordinary member of the faithful, going to Mass on Sundays and doing my best to follow the teachings of the church. And here's someone on a pontifical council who's speaking in error. How do I even begin to make sense of this?
Yeah, it's a question that I get a lot, and Chris, you probably get a lot too. I think it's helpful to remember the in situations like this one, it's helpful to remember the history of the church. And I know you're a history buff. In every era, there have been great theological controversies, and those great theological controversies have been weighed not usually by sort of ivory tower academic theologians, but often waged by debated between the leaders of our church, the bishops of our church, the cardinals of our church, people who, like at the Gregorian University, are very close to the mission and ministry of the Pope. Every era of the church is besotten with theological controversies. The era of the recent pontificates is no exception to that. There were great theological debates that Cardinal Ratzinger took part in during the pontificate of John Paul II, and great and controversial theological issues that took place during the papacy of Benedict XVI. And it's helpful to remember that even in the time leading up to the promulgation of Humana Vitae, there were very serious and influential churchmen who didn't believe that it should be promulgated, yes, or didn't believe that it articulated the truth. So we're graced to know that the Holy Spirit protects the church when she teaches in an official way, and in the universal and ordinary magisterium, or the extraordinary magisterium of the church. We're graced to know that the Holy Spirit protects the church from teaching errors, but we shouldn't be surprised that every time in the church's history is characterized by serious theological debate. And as ordinary Catholics, Cardinal Newman said that every era seems to us like the church is at its last gasp, that the church is ever expiring and always at the end of her mission. But Christ is mightier than the waves that toss the bark of Peter in one direction or another. And so if we focus on Christ, we can be confident that that the church will continue to be led by him and continue to be protected by the Holy Spirit. And so I think for us, our mission remains the same, to be faithful to the teachings of the church, to try to live heroic charity and heroic virtue. There's a tendency, I think, for us Americans to sort of we tend to look at church debate as as similar debate to what we see on C-SPAN, to sort of see it as partisan debate and power politics. And yeah, to be sure, there is partisan debate and power politics in the church, but the church is a supernatural reality, not just a sociological reality, and we can have confidence in the Lord's leadership of that supernatural reality. We should offer our sacrifices for the church. We should fast. We should pray that the Lord will lead our bishops and lead the vicar of Christ, the successor of St. Peter, well. But more than that, we should remember our call, especially as laymen and women, to proclaim the gospel, to sanctify the world, and to be witnesses to the truth that the Lord has given us in his church.
So that's really well said, J.D. Thank you for that. And another one of these theological controversies, it's related, of course, because Quixote cited at chapter 8 of Amoris, this document that is the source of so much controversy. There was a dubia, now, correct me if I'm wrong, almost a year old, issued by four cardinals, including our friend Cardinal Burke. And now more recently, the Kazakh bishops have written something. Bring us up to speed on that and the difference between the two.
Sure. In November of 2016, four cardinals, including Cardinal Burke, indicated that they had sent a list of questions to the Holy Father. The Latin word for question is dubia, or dubia is a question or a doubt. They had sent five questions to the Holy Father about the interpretation of Amoris Laetitiae, because their goal was to interpret Amoris Laetitiae in continuity with the teachings of the Church, in continuity with Familiaris Consortio and the Catechism of the Catholic Church and the Council of Trent, etc. And so there were certain things that seemed ambiguous to them or could be read in one way or another, so they asked the Holy Father to clarify them. Those things have direct clarity has not yet come. There's not yet been a direct response to the dubia. I don't know whether there will be or not. I think they were asking good faith. I don't think they were sort of trying to box the Pope in. And I think we can trust, in some ways that the process will play out as the Lord wants it to play out. So that happened in 2016. More recently, three bishops from Kazakhstan wrote a commentary on recent interpretations of Amoris Laetitiae. They said, look, we think that Amoris Laetitiae has to be interpreted in continuity with the teachings of the Church, and we think that some of the ways that Amoris Laetitiae is being interpreted are not in continuity with the teachings of the Church, that Amoris Laetitiae needs to presume that marriage is indissoluble, that there are consequences to being in a situation of manifest grave sin, that the Church has a call to call people out of that, that conscience can't act in opposition to revelation. So what they issued was essentially a commentary on the commentaries, or a set of points of principles of interpretation of Amoris Laetitia and principles of the teachings of the Church that should be kept in mind in the context of Amoris Laetitia. So it's a very dense, very rich theological document. It has a lot to offer, rooted especially in the teachings of John Paul II's encyclical Veritatis Splendor, which talks about the way we understand the relationship between truth, revelation, and conscience, among other things. And so they published that because they said they felt they had a prophetic responsibility as bishops to teach what the Church says, and therefore how Amoris Laetitia could be understood in continuity with that. The Dubia asking some questions about how to interpret Amoris Laetitia, the letter from the bishops of Kazakhstan offering the principles by which an Orthodox and faithful Catholic would interpret Amoris Laetitia.
Thank you for that explanation. And is it fair for me to say that the circumstances that you have just described, and the submission of the Dubia and the writing of this letter, are in fact part of that part of that drama of theological debate that has always been? These things are not unusual in the history of the Church. These are examples of that drama, of that theological debate that you were talking about previously.
Yeah, that's right. You know, every year at December 6th, everyone talks about St. Nicholas punching Arius in the face,
right,
over the Arian heresy.
Well, I've seen paintings of that, so I know it's true.
Nobody has punched anybody in the face yet. but people are really trying to mete out and get clarity in a moment of theological controversy, of ambiguity, of a document from the Pope that's hard to understand and hard to, on its face, reconcile with what the Church teaches. And so everyone's trying to mete out, okay, what does this mean, and how does it guide the life of the Church?
Let's see if we can take it.
That's difficult.
Let's see if we can take a couple more questions before we have to close. Let's go to Scott in St. Paul, listening on the Real Presence app. Scott, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you. I saw for January 1st that the UCCB was allowing dioceses, through the permission of their bishop, to replace the Solemnity of Mary with a World Peace Day. And I was very surprised by that.
Yeah, I actually did not know that. JD, is that something you saw?
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. I think maybe that some of the details are confused. When the liturgical calendar was revised in 1969, the Solemnity of Mary, the Mother of God, was put into the calendar as a holy day of obligation. And so typically since 1969, that has been a holy day of obligation in the Church. However, the Church allows the USCCB to move some solemnities that take place on a Monday, or to remit the obligation for some solemnities that take place on a Monday, because the bishops might discern that people wouldn't go to Mass because they just got to Mass the day before, or something like that. The USCCB is allowed to do that, and they're timed when they exercise the authority to do that. There are other holy days of obligation that they can move from a day of the week to a Sunday if they choose to as well. So I don't think it's sort of that they were trying to replace the solemnity with something else. The bishops of the United States did remit the holy day of obligation, but I think there might have been some confusion about how that was understood.
How's that, Scott? Does that help?
Yeah, that makes sense, although it was the UN that started World Peace Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it was the conference's intention to replace the solemnity with World Peace Day. World Peace Day was celebrated, and holy day of obligation for the solemnity had been abrogated, so I could see how someone would think that. But I'm sure that the conference was thinking mostly about the holy day of obligation on the Monday and not kind of replacing the one with the other.
Yeah, thank you for clearing that up. Of course, January is Sanctity of Life Month, with Marches for Life all over. Are you going to be in D.C., JD?
I'm not. I'm going to have a bunch of reporters there and some editors, but I'm not going to be there.
All right.
We'll also have a reporter at One Life LA, the big pro-life march in Los Angeles and celebration. I don't know if you guys will be there, but that'll be a great day.
And then, of course, San Francisco is a big one. If you're going to be attending a March for Life, or even if you're not, Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, is available at shop.catholic.com for only $5. It's a wonderful resource to help you learn to speak in charity to people who are confused about the sanctity of human life. JD, it's been a much too fast hour, and we got to get you back on before too long.
Yeah, that'd be great. And by the way, Darren DeLosier, your producer, doing a heck of a job.
All right, I'll tell him. I'll give him a raise. All right.
Thanks so much.
The show is Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check, thank you very much.